Welcome to the Internet Advisor, the place where you don't have to be a geek to find answers to your computer and Internet questions. Each week since 1998, the Internet Advisor crew has been bringing you knowledgeable and interesting guests from the digital world and talking about the hot topics. During our second hour, we try to focus on answering your questions in ways that maybe even your grandma can understand. The door is always open for you at InternetAdvisor.net, our homepage, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now, it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts for this week's edition of the Internet Advisor.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now, it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Welcome aboard the Internet Advisor. Hi, this is Foster Brown, the co-host of the program, along with Mr. Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, and Rick Broida, who is the Gadget Man. And we've kind of titled, a little tongue-in-cheek, our program today, All I Want for Christmas, or the Holidays Is, and Rick is going to fill in the blanks. He is our Gadget Man, and he's going to be talking about all sorts of gadgets out there for sale for Christmas and the holidays, and some great deals as well. So stick around. Well, it's so good to have you here for our program, and glad you decided to download the podcast or to subscribe to it and make us part of whatever happens to be going on in your day. We got a very special program lined up for you. Mr. Gary Baker in-house, of course.
Of course, and it's fun to be here as always, especially when it's cold outside.
Ah, yes, and when we're talking about gadgets, you know that kind
gadgets.
Of makes the juices flow. Ed Riddell is here as well.
And I'd rather be Christmas shopping.
Oh, boy.
Well,
I am not the type of person that likes going to the malls.
Oh, I don't either. Well, we may get some help on that, particularly because we have Gadget Man with us, Rick Broida. How you doing, Rick?
I'm great, guys. How you doing?
Very good. Glad you could be with us this time by phone. But as always, good to have you here. Rick is, by the way, a blogger. You'll find him all over the internets. You'll find him on the Cheapskate blog, on CNET, and a number of other ones as well. But Rick, we have you in today to talk about gadgets since the holidays are upon us. And before we get to talking about specific ones, I thought what might be interesting, and by the way, folks, today, if anything, our notes, our show notes, which are on the homepage at InternetAdvisor.net, will be very useful to you because they're loaded with all sorts of goodies that we'll talk about more. But one of them is this 9 online shopping tips by a lady who's been our guest before, Andrea Warwick. And I thought, Rick, we could talk about that before we get into talking about the actual gadgets. As Ed said, he hates going into the malls. I don't know. Hey, Gary, well, how about you?
I'm not a shopper.
Yeah,
I like
either.
Online shopping.
Yeah.
I go in and buy.
Yes.
I just don't
yes.
like to shop.
That's exactly it. The hunt for me is not fun. I'm like most men, you know, we go out, we look for the odd item, you know, bam, it's done. We're out of there.
In and then out. Yep. Yep.
And the whole concept of, well, let's just walk around kind of, I don't know, but are you that way, Rick? You want to get in there and get out?
You know, I'm a serial online shopper. I love right. shopping online, but to get me to set foot in a store, it would take a lot.
Okay, now Andrea has put together 9 very interesting suggestions here. Let's pick up some of the ones you find most interesting with the top of the list.
Well, sure. And at the top of the list is this while supplies last, which is kind of referring to the daily deal concept that's become so popular these days. Sites like Woot, for example.
That's WOOT.com.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Right. And they're one of the really big names in the deal of the day site. And for those unfamiliar with it, it's just basically a site that features a different deal every day of the week. And, you know, Woot has become so large that they've actually broken this out where they have a different daily deal across lots of different categories. So
yes.
It's not just a tech deal, it's a home right. deal, it's a kids deal, it's a wine deal, it's kind of everything.
And you also places like Amazon are, right? They have what they call, was it lightning?
They do like these lightning deals. They have this gold box is their thing that they do also.
Okay.
Deals of the day. And so, you know, just it's a very popular thing right now. There's a site called Daily Steals.
Wow.
There's one sale a day. So it's really become kind of a big thing. Yeah. And, you know, these sites are very fun because they really do have some fairly exclusive deals that you can't right. find anywhere else.
So the trick is to keep your eye out, you know, get some of these things kind of as favorites on your browser, and then when you go looking for something online, remember that you're going to have special deals coming up at these different places.
Exactly right. And, of course, you read the Cheapskate every day, and I carry the best ones that are out there.
Yep, that's it.
Rick, something that would be near and dear to your heart is I've started to use Ebates. And Ebates.com, you basically get your best deal from the site. But if you go to the site through Ebates, you get an extra, 3%, 4%, 8% off.
Excellent.
I think I turned you on to that, didn't I, Gary?
I think you did. Yes. Now that I think of it, yes, you did. And I've been turning other people on to it.
Where is my referral bonus for
this? You should be getting it. It's in the mail, I'm sure.
It's an Ebates someplace. I saw something interesting on her list that kind of is counterintuitive in some ways. What she says is, in with the old. The concept being that sometimes buying the newest bleeding edge thing isn't always the best deal.
Well, old has gotten so, because...
Yeah, what is relative?
Old has gotten to be so good that an incremental increase in functionality or resolution in the screen or something like that sometimes just isn't worth it if you want to save some money, right, Rick?
Well, here, I'm gonna trademark a new phrase right now. Old is the new.
I got it.
Oh, I like it. Yes, I've never heard that before.
I just wrote it down, and I put RB behind it. Okay.
I'm giving you my A-list material here.
All right. Hey, one of the other things that she has down here, and I had forgotten about that, is to wait and procrastinate. In other words, sometimes there are some key times to wait for, and she mentions one that's coming up, which is coming up on Monday, December the 17th, and we hope that you folks have heard this before that happens.
Free shipping day. Yes, Monday, December 17th is free shipping day, where I think it's up to 1,200 different online stores now are participating in giving you free shipping on whatever you buy. Now, whether it's going to be shipping in time to get you gifts in time for Christmas, that will probably vary a little bit from store to store. And, it's worth noting that a lot of stores offer free shipping when you spend a minimum of like $25 or $50 anyway. So I wouldn't necessarily wait until that day to make your purchase. But that's a great example of this whole, wait and procrastinate idea, where if you, kind of target a day like that, you can save a few bucks on shipping.
Speaking of, go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to add on to that, that one of my, favorite expressions is, cheap things come to those who wait. And, even if something seems a little overpriced now, there's a very good bet that, a month from now, 3 months from now, it will cost less. I mean, a week from now, it may cost less. So if you're feeling like I can't afford this particular product right now, just wait, because it's almost guaranteed that it will be cheaper.
We're taking all these sayings down. I'll be Chairman Rick Sings. Coming back in just a minute to talk with Rick about gadgets. Delighted to have you with us, or actually to have you allow us to be with you. I'm the Internet Advisor, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, and Rick Broida, Gadget Man, is with us. Every month we have Rick in to talk about gadgets. He runs regular blog you will find online called Cheapskate, and you can link to him through our homepage. And Rick, in general, it's just a delight to have you with us. Rick, one of the things I wanted to ask you, and by the way, we have decided here we are going to be putting together, we'll give you royalties on this, of course, a book of the sayings of Chairman Rick. So far we got two of them today. The old is the new, and cheap things come to those who wait.
Yep. Trademark
them. Now, one of the things, I think, Ed, you said this, or maybe Gary, you said this one time before, about buying in general, and then we'll talk about some gadgets, is that I forget who said it, that after looking online and all the prices there, you actually found better prices in the stores. Was it you, Gary?
And actually, I did. It was a video camera, was using it to videotape my son playing lacrosse.
Yep.
It was interesting because they teased me later that night when I got to the arena, because they play indoors now. They call box lacrosse. They said, we heard you on the radio, and we know that you were buying this camera, and is that the new camera, right? But I did. I went online, I looked in, did all the research, and then I said, I really have to touch it. I really want to feel how it's going to feel in my hand and how it's going to look and how we can use it. And when I went to Best Buy, it was $20 cheaper.
Yeah, so you know, and you bring up a good point.
And I'd rather do it if it were the same. I would buy it at Best Buy also.
You know, whenever I go shopping online and I just have to touch something, I always feel so dirty just going into a store just to look at the merchandise, knowing I'm not going to buy it, and just like using them. And to compare items. But you're right. Sometimes you do find that the prices are cheaper.
There's a term.
So there's a little moral dilemma there I have to overcome.
That's what keeps the CEO of Best Buy up at night.
Yeah. There's a term for that. I'm trying to think. I heard somebody give a term for that the other day, of going into a store and just kind of using it for searching around. Any case, have you found...
And I would rather buy locally,
yes,
obviously,
yes,
if we can. And they were... You know, you guys teased me a little bit, and they teased me that night at the arena, too, because I said, well, it's really hard to return it through the internet. And it is varying degrees of hard, but you got to package it up. You can't just go in and say, here, this is the problem I'm having, and have them replace it right then and there, like you can at Best Buy.
I was curious, comment on that, Rick, from your perspective, online versus in-store buying.
Well, you know, I'm surprised to hear that you found a camcorder for less in store than you did online. I'm sure it happens, you know, but I think as a general rule, you know, most stuff you can generally do better shopping online. Now, that being said, I feel exactly like Ed does at times, where, you know, you go into a store just to you know, kind of be able to get your hands on something. And I really recommend when anybody's shopping for a laptop that they should really try and go and look at it if they can, so they can test the keyboard and all that.
That's very
good. But
then
to turn around and go and get it for less online, you know, it's business. It's marketing.
Yeah.
This is how the world works. But you know, I do think that there is certainly some value in having a store like the Best Buy or even a Micro Center.
Yep, Micro Center.
And that sometimes you just need to kind of hang the savings and support these businesses because they won't be there if you don't. And
what sometimes... are they?
Well, and you know, the thing that's going on today is that a lot of online retailers say that if you go ahead and go to the store, take your camera and and you know, look at the barcode, because there's barcode readers on your camera now, or you can download and put
them on
that app.
There's an app for that called
Red
Laser.
There is an app for that, right. Red Laser and many others.
And many others, yeah.
They'll give you $5 extra off if you do that. So they're telling people to go to the store and then come back and buy it online. And and that feels really dirty to me.
Yeah. All right, hey, Rick, let's talk about some gadgets that you've got out there that you've been looking at and think are worthy of our audience.
Sure. Well, I wanted to talk a little bit about some, I think, some of the best gadget gifts for the holidays coming up.
Yep.
And let's start off with something that is kind of a great little stocking stuffer, or in my case, like an eighth night of Hanukkah kind of a gift. And it is called the Easy Macro. And you can find it online at easy-macro.com. And this is not a new product. I think this actually came out about a year ago, but I just got one to test, and it's really cool. It's basically a rubber band that fits around your smartphone, and it can work with just about any smartphone, and it has a little embedded macro lens that fits over your smartphone's camera lens, and it enables you to do macro photography with your smartphone.
Now, macro photography, explain for the audience what macro photography is.
Close-up photography.
Okay.
In other words, if you want to take a real close-up shot of, you know, say, just food or something like that.
A flower or something like
exactly.
that. Right. Wow.
Yeah.
And that's Matt. And what is that again?
It's called Easy Macro.
Easy Macro.
And there's a hyphen in there, easy-macro.com. And this thing is like $15, you know, so it's very inexpensive.
Actually, pardon me, I just went to the site. This may have just happened since you looked at it. It's $12.45 is what they've reduced it to.
Yeah, I think they're having a sale throughout this month.
Today, right?
Yeah.
Well, it may be going on while you've downloaded this after that we're talking about it. But by the way, folks, I'm going to be posting these online on our homepage as well after we finish. Okay, so Easy Macro. That sounds really cool. What else you got?
Right. So another, for music fans out there, there's a great gizmo from Belkin, which is called the Bluetooth Music Receiver. And what this does is that you can plug this little gadget into your stereo or in any standalone set of speakers that you might have, and it essentially turns them into Bluetooth speakers.
Oh,
so
wow.
You can then stream music from your phone or your tablet using an app like Pandora or Spotify or something like that to your favorite set of speakers.
I like
really
that.
Really handy little gadget.
That really is cool. What's that running, by the way? I'm curious.
Looks like $24.99. I'm there, man. I hope my family isn't listening.
Or that they are, so they know what to buy you. That is wonderful. Okay, so that's called the Bluetooth Music Receiver. You know, we listen to books on tape quite a bit, and I have applications on my Windows Phone and on my iPhone. And one of the problems I have is I'd love to just sit down in the living room and listen to it, but there's no convenient app for doing or application on my MacBook to do that. But this would be really great.
Yeah, this is a great little item for music lovers or for listening to books or radio, for example.
Yes, radio, anything that you're streaming or anything that you have on your device as well.
Exactly.
Two winners. These are great. All right, next up.
I was thinking conference calls myself, but if you want
to broadcast. For a business application,
yeah, if you want to broadcast a conference call to everybody in the room, right? Speakers.
Yep, wow. That would work, too. Yep. That's a great idea.
That's excellent. Okay, yep. We've already got a great application for those. All right, next one up.
Okay, so while we're sticking with the under $50 gadgets, last month we had on a couple of guys from, I think it's pronounced Favi.
Oh, Favi, yeah, F-A-V-I. Yes, here, locally fabricated in Sterling Heights, Michigan, yeah.
Yes, and they talked to us about a product called the Smart Stick, which I actually just got one in and was just playing with it today for the first time. And turns out it's a really cool little gadget, and I'm very excited to be able to recommend it because... it starts at $50, and it's just a little, it looks like a flash, like an oversized flash drive that plugs into an HDMI port on your TV and effectively turns your TV into kind of like an Android tablet almost with all the same apps and games and cool stuff that you can do on a tablet right on your TV. And so it's a pretty cool little gizmo.
Do they have any subscription services in like Hulu and HBO and things like that?
Absolutely. You can, if you install those apps for Netflix or Hulu or what have
right.
And then just sign into your account, and it's you know, so in that respect, it can take the place of like a Roku box or an Apple TV.
And then is there an on-screen kind of menu you can work with? I wasn't in for that program, so I think you guys may have heard more than I am asking.
Oh, yeah, it was incredible. It comes with a 4 or 8 gigabyte version of the device. You can actually store movies on it.
So you can record.
You can record something and take it over grandma's, plug it into her TV, and... If you wanted to, or, you know, if you had internet access, which is the main purpose of this, you could stream and use any of these applications that are on this.
Excellent. So that's the Smart Stick, and we'll make sure to post these things. Rick Breida, Gadget Man, you can hear why we have him here. He's also the Cheapskate, which is a wonderful combination. And no, I'm not saying anything nasty about him. He's very proud of being cheap. Rick, we'll be back with you at just a moment to talk about more gadgets on this special pre-holiday edition of the Internet Advisor. So don't miss a thing. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Internet Advisor, and we are in our pre-holiday kind of shopping mode here. We have Rick Breida, who is our gadget man, on with us. By the way, you'll find a link on our homepage to Rick's Cheapskate blog, where you can keep up with some great deals. You've got one going now, and I realize because some people will be hearing this later, it may already be passed, and I don't want to get people too... their heads too mixed up, Rick, but you regularly post up their special deals that you find that sometimes are time-limited, right, on the Cheapskate blog?
That is very true. In fact, very often deals will sell out even, you know, before the day is out or even the morning is out, so it's tough to know, but that's why I always recommend everybody check early.
I also follow Rick on Facebook, and Rick actually had one. You posted one this week. I thought, oh, man, that looks really good, and the next comment I saw was, oops, it's sold out.
Sorry.
It goes really fast, but if you keep up with Rick, you can get some incredible buys out there, so that's great. By the way, one thing I saw... And Andrea's notes that we talked about, Andrea Wark, some tips for buying online.
You mean buy on Mondays?
I was going to ask about that. Tell me, Rick, about that.
Rick, what do you think?
One of the tips was buy on Mondays?
Yeah.
Right.
What do you think of that?
They think that her comment was the manufacturers usually apply the discounts on electronics on Mondays, you know, after the weekends. They basically get everybody on the weekends to buy whatever they're buying, and then if they're going to discount, they're going to do it on a Monday.
You know, I've never heard anything. I've never heard of that specifically.
Okay.
You know, people. You know, even when Black Friday and Cyber Monday roll around, I always, you know, remind people that I see these deals every day of the week, every day of the year.
Good idea.
And so, to say that Monday in particular is an especially good day for online deals or even retail deals, I don't see that. If there's a trend, maybe I'm missing it.
Well, I have a feeling it may have been true in the past. Like, for instance, I saw an article this week that Cyber Monday is no longer Cyber Monday. It's Cyber Week.
Yeah, exactly.
They're moving products.
And the whole idea of Cyber Monday was you couldn't get high-speed connectivity at home,
right.
But you could at work, so you waited till Monday and at work and did all your shopping while you were supposed to be working. And, and now you got just as good a connectivity at home and sometimes better.
So has that changed the surfing at work? I don't know, Rick, if you've seen any statistic or not. I'm just curious.
Well, seeing as I work from a home office, I don't have a workplace to compare.
Yeah, right. Let's talk about some more deals you got. By the way, we posted those three deals that you mentioned, the first three. So let's hear some more from you, Rick.
Well, sure. Okay, while we're talking about... Well, actually, I'm going to talk about something that I posted a couple days ago online. And this is for... We were talking about Ebates earlier as a way to get cash back on everything that you buy. But one of the other tips that I love to tell people about is that when you get to the checkout page for any given store, almost without exception, you'll see that field that says, you know, coupon code or promo code or whatever.
Yes. Yeah.
And all the, you know, any time I see that, I think, gosh, I wish I had a coupon code for the store because, you know, who wouldn't love to get free shipping or get, you know, $5, $10 off or whatever.
Right.
And so what I invariably do is I open up a new tab and I do some Google searching for the store where I'm about to make a purchase and see if I can come up with a code. And sometimes I do and sometimes I don't. But there is a new browser plugin, which is called Coupons at Checkout. And it basically takes all the legwork out of that coupon code searching for you. So once you have this plugin installed, you get to your checkout page, and now you see that the little promo field or the coupon code field is highlighted in red, and you click it, and you'll see a list of all the coupon codes that may be applicable to your purchase. And if you find one that matches, you just click, and it inserts it, and you're good to go.
Sweet.
I love that. And I've used that technique for years, and I'm so glad you've brought that up because I've been able to buy eyeglasses online. I don't know. When I go to the eye doctor and I get my prescription glasses, you know, I'll pay their $200 for eyeglasses, but then I go to $39eyeglasses.com and I get two for one for $39.
Now, Rick, when you said this is a plug-in, is it any particular browser that it works with?
I was surprised, actually, because I thought, oh, this is only going to be for, like, Firefox or Chrome or whatever. But it actually works with all the major browsers, including Internet Explorer and Safari.
Wow.
And what I especially like about it is that it's not a toolbar. So it's totally behind the scenes.
There's nothing in your face about it at all.
And it just pops up, you know, it's just there when you want it. And, you know, I did hear from some commenters who were naturally suspicious and said, oh, they know where I'm shopping and so forth. Yeah. And, you know,
but they do anyway.
Yes.
And they did long before the Internet. You know, they're companies.
Although I have to say,
Maxiom, for instance, there's companies.
Can I ask you to comment on this, Rick, just quickly? Do Not Track is becoming a big thing. That's a browser embed that I, for instance, have on the Chrome browser. And it's now part of, I think, IE 10, the new Internet Explorer 10, by default. Is that wise?
Well, it stops you from tracking online.
Yeah.
But as soon as you use your credit card,
there are
companies that go to another company called Axiom who buys all that data and then provides it out. So, you know, if you think that what you're purchasing is not readily available to merchandisers that are willing to pay for it, that's mistaken. Right. And it has nothing to do whether you buy online or in the store. It's if you use your credit card, that information can be available.
So it's already being gotten.
So give it up and go ahead and shop online just like you do in the store.
What do you think of that Do Not Track thing, though, Rick, in general?
You know, people accuse me of being naive about this, but I don't worry about online security. I really don't. So the short answer to your question is I don't use it. I don't fret about it. I shop online all the time.
Right.
Never had an issue that I'm aware of. And it's as Gary says, that they're either going to track you from within your browser or they're going to track you after the fact. And I don't have a problem with it. If companies want to know what I'm buying, well, fine. I don't care.
You know, don't say anything or go to any site that your mother or that you couldn't tell your mother or your pastor about, right?
And that's, you know, there you go.
I'm not buying enriched plutonium, so I really have nothing to fear, I don't think.
Right, Homeland Security shouldn't be. Now, when you mentioned the coupons at checkout, where would they go to get that?
That I thought you were going to ask me that question. That is actually at a site that's called couponfollow.com.
Okay, couponfollow.com.
And actually, yeah, though, if you put in coupons at checkout, it'll redirect you to couponfollow.com/checkout.
I'm trying to build a little list here on our homepage that people can go back to when they listen to the podcast, and they can go back and pick these goodies up. Okay, next. That was excellent.
I've already got that one installed while you guys were talking.
I'm going to get to my browser quickly, too. All right, Nick. What's up next, Rick?
Okay, well, you know what? As much as we've been talking about great gadgets, things to buy for the holidays, I want to talk about a couple of the non-starters for me. My least favorite gadgets of the year, because, you know, you can't have a best list without a worst list.
Oh, yeah.
And not to get all negative, but I'm going to say if you're shopping for a laptop this year, you're going to be seeing a lot of the Chromebooks, which made a lot of news recently because I think it was Acer and Samsung came out with Chromebooks priced at, $199 and $249, which, you know, that sounds like a great price for a laptop.
Just quickly, Chromebook, essentially, the operating system exists in the cloud. Am I right?
That is correct. This is Google's Chrome operating system.
Right.
And certainly, I think the OS itself may actually be resident on the machine.
Yes, it is. But like everything else, you will find on the cloud and Google Docs and things like that. Am I right, Eddie? Saying it right, because I think
it's cloud-based applications.
Okay, and that's why it's a lighter machine in the sense that the operating system, et cetera, is not that complicated on it. Pretty stripped down. It's like the old we talked about dumb monitors or dumb terminals, which didn't have a lot on them, but you plugged into a network. I just wanted to give that background.
So these are
Chromebooks now being put out by Acer and Samsung. Right. Okay. So what is your concern?
Well, so my concern is that although the price is certainly appealing, for a few dollars more, you make the leap from a small, crowded, pretty underpowered laptop to a full-blown Windows machine with a hard drive and a bigger screen and a full-size keyboard. The Chromebooks remind me a lot of netbooks of a couple of years ago, which were cheap and underpowered and uncomfortable to use. And the Chromebooks, to me, are the same. And certainly there's a segment of the population that might find them useful, but I couldn't see buying one. I can't see any practical use for one for myself and any other reason.
I've also heard that the hardware itself is pretty chintzy.
Yeah, very plasticky and kind of cheap. But it doesn't have to be.
Yeah, exactly. They get it down to that. So when is a bargain not a bargain? Sometimes when it's too good to be true. You know, there's no free lunch around, and I think maybe that's been one of your maxims in the past. There's no free lunch. Okay, what other ones?
Okay, so I would say skip the Chrome laptops, and I would also advise against a Windows 8 tablet. And I'm bummed that Cal's not here so we can mix it up on, Surface versus Apple, everything I've seen, heard, read, felt, touched about the Windows 8 tablets, whether it's full-blown Windows 8 Pro or it's Windows Surface or Surface RT, I can't even keep them all straight, is that the operating system is not ready for prime time, the hardware is nice, but it's overpriced, and I wouldn't touch it.
And there's not a lot of it out there. Let's talk a little more about that when we come back, because I've been following that pretty extensively, because I'm trying out Windows 8, as you know, and it's become a little bit of an apostle for it, and also one of the complainers as well. Back in a moment with more of Rick. Thank you for joining us for the Internet Advisor and for having made this program part of your lives. Delighted to have you do that. And I think the bonus for you is that you got some great gadgets we've been talking about with Rick Broida, our gadget man. By the way, you can find out more about Rick and his other adventures regularly on CNET. Is the Cheapskip blog a daily, Rick?
It is.
Weekdays is a daily. I just know every time I go there, it's always something new. I didn't know. That's a daily. And you can get to that, by the way, going to our homepage, internetadvisor.net, and then you'll see Rick's name highlighted there. Click on that. Plus, we're also listing a lot of the gizmos that he's been talking about here, gadgets. Let's talk a little bit, Rick, when we broke, and this is a big subject. One of your recommendations in terms of what not to get is a Windows-based tablet right now, whether it's the Surface RT or the Surface Pro, which is available through some OEMs. I have heard this as a commentary that one of the problems right now is a lot of these OEMs have been holding back. then among other things, there's not much to choose from when you go out there in terms of varieties of machines. There's
as far as tablets?
It's as far as tablets, that they haven't put a lot into the pipeline. That was part of the commentary I've heard about, the devices.
To compete with the Surface.
Well, yeah, exactly. Or to offer an alternative to the Surface.
Well, that's what I meant, compete with.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, yeah, exactly. I'm sorry. Because the Surface really is Microsoft's first, you know, out-of-the-gate kind of thing. So I think, Rick, you're right in the sense that even as somebody, I am far more open to Windows 8. I have not used it in that format yet, and I think you had your hands on with an RT, didn't you? A Surface tablet?
Well, you know what? I'll be perfectly honest and say that I have not used a Windows 8 tablet myself.
Okay. But your commentary, by the way, is not far off. A lot of people are saying, not ready for prime time yet.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, Gary, you brought up something during the commercial break about the three big failures that you discovered
that I've been told about.
Yes.
Right?
And that would be what?
Well, you know, battery life on the Pro is less than the RT.
Right, of course.
And there's only 4 to 5 hours of battery life. And they're comparing that to a tablet. But I'm talking about replacing my PC with it, which only has 3 to 4 hours of battery life, 4 or 5 maybe when it was new. Mm. So I'm thinking it's still about the same that I have now when I want to take my my laptop around places.
Right, you're not looking at it to replace your iPad. You're looking at replacing your laptop.
I also heard, you know, no start button, but there's a workaround for that.
Right.
It's a brand new...
That has never, by the way, excuse me, I've been using the Windows 8 now for about a month, and that's never been an issue.
And it's a brand new paradigm,
right? It is.
Thankfully, Microsoft has finally come out with brand new software. The other things that I've heard, Rick, were... You know, it's hard. Sometimes escape buttons don't work the same way. So it's hard to escape out of things that you would normally use the escape button for. And the last thing was the print. And there's workarounds for that, too. Although I think they'll fix that in a soon-to-be-released
But you also brought up another point, too. You don't have any of those three functions on an iPad.
I don't have them on an iPad.
You know, so it doesn't matter.
It's like, you know, people are complaining. I have yet to really play with it. I've seen them. I've gone up and typed a few. I like the tactile feel of it.
Yeah. When Dave Sawyer had some in here, it was a lot of fun playing with that. Rick, one of the things you said many moons ago here on the show, and I agree with now having used it, Windows 8 is optimized for a touchscreen.
Definitely.
Absolutely. Having used it on a desktop exclusively, it's built for a touchscreen.
Yep, and when I'm running Windows 8 on a laptop, I still have the demo version, waiting to get a laptop with a real version of it. I have to think, okay, how am I going to do this? Oh, think that it's a tablet, so I have to use the mouse with a swipe gesture, and then I can usually find out what I need to do.
Okay, Rick, let's wrap up with you with some other good things you've got here before we let you go.
To hear Rick talk about some of these things. He made a recommendation. I'm curious.
All right, go right ahead.
Okay, you're going to hold me to it now.
Not going to take on Cal. You're going to take on Gary.
No. I'm really thinking about a Surface Pro when they come out in January, I'm getting all the feedback I can. So, Rick, what's your opinion here?
Well, okay, and I'm not the best person to ask, and just in that I have not tried one myself.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, price is always a major consideration, and the Surface Pro is going to start, I think, at about $1,000.
Yeah.
Which is a no-go for me for the same reason that I won't buy a MacBook
I was really hoping around $600-700.
No. And by the way, welcome to the folks from WJR, our flagship station in Detroit, who are just joining us here on the Internet Advisor. My name is Foster Brown, Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, and Rick Breida, our gadget man, are with us right now. We're kind of wrapping up our first hour talking about gadgets with Rick, but we're talking right now about this upcoming Windows Pro tablet called the Surface Pro. Surface Pro.
Yep.
So, Rick,
Surface RT.
The price point is a killer. You're right.
Price point is a killer, and then I still think that, you know, at the moment there's not a lot of apps, and this will change, there's not a lot of apps that take advantage of, you know, the whole Surface architecture. And, you know, part of it is just my dissatisfaction with the Windows 8 experience on the desktop, which I just really despise. Now, once I actually get a chance to use a tablet and see if it would work for my purposes from a business perspective, I may change my tune. But right now, I just cannot see spending that kind of money on a technology that's really
that you despise.
Well, because we haven't used it yet, and I wasn't going to go out and buy it right away. I was going to wait till the end of the month.
But you know something? Well, first of all, for some reason, Microsoft isn't going to make those things their version. Their version of the Windows Surface Pro. Now, there are Windows Surface Pro machines out there now. I think there's one called the Yoga by Lenovo. Am I right? I think.
That sounds right to me.
Yeah, and there's a few, but they're very few. I think that's part of the problem.
There'll be more.
But there will be more, and I think when it comes out, let me just give you a little quick thing. I saw some kids today playing with, Eddie, what is it called?
It was the Nintendo DSs.
The Nintendo DSs. The little handheld things. They have touch screens, and they're full of little icons. There's no mousing around that picture. And these kids, their fingers are on it. They're constantly flying around, touching things. That, I think, says more about what the future of computing is going to be and what our screens will look like, which I think will be much more like the modern user interface of Windows 8.
I think you're right. I the mouse is over 50 years old. I think it might be close to 60 years old when Park came out with it back in...
I thought it was 69 or 71, maybe earlier.
Yeah, okay, so maybe it's, I think it's earlier, actually. Yeah. But anyway, it's about time we replace it.
Fingers have been
around
longer than that.
Yeah, we should replace it with something else, right?
Rick, anything you want to wrap up with? I want to make sure we've gotten all that we can get out of you.
Well, I'll tell you what, let's wrap up with a deal.
Oh, yes.
We are talking to the Chief Kid here. And this isn't so much about tech, although you do need to go to a website to get it, as it is just about a good freebie. And if you go to a site called restaurant.com, which is already a great resource for getting cheap gift certificates for local restaurants, they're actually offering a free $10 gift certificate that you can give to any and all of your friends, family member, coworkers, anybody that you like, that you have an email address for.
Wow.
There's no strings attached. There's nothing to sign up for. It's just a great freebie. And it's actually, the name of this promotion is Feed It Forward. So if you go to feeditforward.restaurant.com, you'll see the info for this. And just a nice little way to give somebody a valuable gift.
What
without
a wonderful.
Spending a penny.
Yeah, what a great electronic stocking stuffer. Rick Broida, you have done it again. Ladies and gentlemen, this is our man, Gadget Man. He's also the Cheapskate. You'll find him, I'm not slighting him when I say that. He's very proud of the title. You'll find him at CNET. And we've got a link off of our homepage, which is internetadvisor.net. Rick, thanks so much for being around with us again.
Thank you, guys.
Happy holidays. We'll see you afterwards in January. We'll talk about some of those gadgets.
And maybe I look forward to it.
Those Windows surfaces as well. Thanks so much, Rick. And folks, you stick around because you have maybe just stepped into the conversation here, but we have a second hour of the Internet Advisor coming up, and we are going to be live to take your calls here in our flagship station at WJR 760 AM in Detroit. So here's the number. 800-859-0957. Gary Baker, Ed Rudell, and myself, Foster Rao, we're here in studio to answer your questions. We'll also have somebody on the beginning of this next hour, Aaron Wimette, who is here from Apex Digital, to give us some answers about getting over into Windows 8. How do you do that? We'll be talking about that in just a little bit after the break. So please stay tuned here to the Internet Advisor. Whether you're listening to us on one of our affiliates through Michigan Talk Radio or through our podcast, contact us by email if you have a question through our homepage at internetadvisor.net or put your question into one of our forums. Now let's rejoin the Internet Advisor team for the second hour of our podcast. We intend to be very helpful for you. Hi, I'm Foster Brown. Gary Baker, my co-host, along with Ed Rudell, part of our tech team, are in studio to help answer your questions about your computer problems. Hey, maybe you just switched to a Windows 8 machine and you're wondering about how to solve some of those problems of just kind of getting started. We're going to have a special guest, Aaron Wimette, with us from Apex Digital to help talk about how you transfer over to Windows 8. And we'll be here to answer all your other questions at 800-859-0957. 800-859-0WJR. Once again, thank you for joining us here on the Internet Advisor. If we just kind of popped up on your radio, glad to have you with us. Following up on Michigan State basketball, we're here live to take your questions today at 800-859-0957. 859-0WJR. First come, first serve. Get on board. Get yourself in line, and we will answer your questions as you call in. Any question you may have about your computer, or maybe about a smartphone, about another digital device, there are now so many of them, we'd be happy to help you. 800-859-0957, 800-859-0WJR. Gary Baker, Ed Rudell with me in studio here, and we are delighted to say we also have a return visit with Aaron Wimette, who is with Apex Digital, a company that helps other companies with their internet presence and their technologies. And Aaron, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me today.
I understand from the last time you were here, you were the man who wrote the, not the Bible, but at least the commentary on the on Windows 8, kind of the biblical commentary on Windows 8, am I right? You were a manual for people.
I do. I helped Microsoft develop curriculum and certification around a variety of their technologies, including Windows 8.
Wonderful. So we've asked you to come on today to help us with some questions we've been getting in. And one of the ones that we've had that is kind of like really bottom line is, what can I transfer from my old system to my new Windows 8 machine or that I can upgrade?
So it really depends. If you are running, let's say you have a newer machine that was running Windows 7, mm-hmm. you can actually insert the Windows 8 disk and upgrade straight from there, and all your files and programs and settings will be preserved.
So your programs will come as well. Now, is it possible you may lose some programs that are incompatible?
During the upgrade process, there's an application that runs. Mm-hmm. It's called the Upgrade Advisor mm-hmm. that goes through and looks at all the existing programs that you have. It has a huge database of applications that it knows about, and if it finds one that is incompatible, it'll tell you. That you might need to go find a newer version. It'll tell you the version that you have and the name and the manufacturer, and it'll point you in the right direction.
As I remember, when I did my upgrade from my Windows 7 machine, it left me a little folder on the desktop that said programs that did not, I forget how it was worded, but essentially it says this is the programs that didn't move. And there was only one at that time that was not compatible with the new Windows 8. And so everything else had switched completely. I afterwards had some problems, and we'll talk about that some other time, that absolutely wiped out everything I had. But that's another story. So if you're just doing an upgrade, people don't have to tear their hair out if it's on their same machine, right?
Right. If it's on the same machine and the new one is was capable of running Windows Vista or Windows 7, you can do what's called an in-place upgrade just by inserting the media and following the on-screen instructions. It's pretty simple.
Okay.
Most people should be able to do it without much difficulty.
Okay.
So, Aaron, first of all, we should disclose that when I was at SME, you did a lot of work for us.
Uh-huh.
Through Apex Digital Solutions, right there in Sterling Heights. So I just wanted to make sure that we disclosed that fact. But and you've done a lot of other things. Apex Digital was Microsoft's Partner of the Year here in a four-state Heartland region, and you were one of the finalists, and I think one of 15 companies partners that have been brought in by Microsoft to look at some of their newest technology and give them some feedback. And so we applaud you guys for that, having a local firm right here in Michigan that, is caught Microsoft's attention like you have. So that's great news.
Well, thank you.
And thank you for applying that expertise here. Now, let me push this a little further, because there have been some complaints, apparently, from people, for instance, who will go out to a store and buy some of the great deals on laptops, mm-hmm. for instance, that are running Windows 8. And then they're stuck and saying, how do I get my programs and all that stuff over to this
old
new
machine,
to the new machine. So, what's the quick answer?
So, the quick answer is if your old machine is running Windows Vista or 7, it is already there's already an application installed called Windows Easy Transfer.
Mm-hmm.
So, on both your old, so you have your old machine and your new machine side by side. Hopefully, you have room on your desk to do this. but on both of them, you just launch the Windows Easy Transfer. So, in Windows 7, it's really easy. You can just click the Start button and start typing Easy Transfer.
Right.
And the program bar will automatically filter, and you'll see the easy transfer program. And on your window, and on your new Windows 8 machine, you do exactly the same thing. You can, if you're using a mouse, you can drag your mouse up to the upper right hand corner, mm-hmm. and then that'll expose the charms menu on the side, and you can click the giant magnifying glass and start typing easy transfer.
Or just type iPhone. Just start typing easy transfer on the
start page. If you're was thinking if you're in desktop mode.
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah, so, but yeah, if you're just at the tile screen, you mm-hmm. can just start typing easy.
Right.
And
right.
I think the first option is easy transfer. So you run that on both machines. It's going to ask you, is this your old computer or your new computer?
Mm-hmm.
And
you run through it there. Now, by the way, we should say to our folks, we have both a text version of how to do this, and we have a link to a video from YouTube that show you how to go through these steps. I'm shortcutting you a little bit, Aaron, because Take a pause. When we come back, I want to ask you, how do we get our programs from the old machine to the new machine, which is a little bit more difficult, but we'll do that in just a moment when we come back here on the Internet Advisor with Aaron Wimmett from Apex Digital talking about Windows 8 and how to get started. Our live call-in number is 800-859-0957. 800-859-0WJR. And we've got Bert and Joe standing by. We'll be getting to them in just a moment. Aaron Wimmett is with us from Apex Digital, and we were talking about Windows 8 and getting started with it. Aaron, just a quick question for you to follow up here to our previous conversation. We understand the easy migration wizard is there on your old computer, Windows 7, and then on Windows 8. But what happens when I've got a brand new machine and I'm trying to get my programs from my old computer, because programs don't necessarily transfer when you do that?
That is correct. Usually the best thing to do is to locate the original installation media and then install it fresh.
And start over again, essentially. Okay.
That is usually what I would recommend for most people, especially if you have a brand new computer.
Okay.
Yeah, it's one of those things that the best thing about, about a lot of the programs out there that transfer stuff is they get everything the way it was. And a lot of the bad thing about programs like that is they get everything the way it was.
Okay, good. So, wait, stop. That's a very important point. Ed, you were making that point before. So what Aaron has just said is there are third-party programs out there that will take everything that's on your old machine and put it onto your new machine. But that's the problem, because there may be things on your old machine you don't necessarily want, like bugs and problems like that, right?
Right. So there is one program that I've used in the past. It's called Z-Install. It's kind of pricey. I would really recommend people stay away from things like that. Although the program works fine for like XP to Windows 7 and Vista to Windows 7.
Yeah.
They are coming out with a version to Windows 8. I don't think it's been released yet.
No.
But I would really just recommend people save their money on those types of programs and locate the installation media and just go through it. You'll probably spend about the same amount of time, only you'll have something you'll be much happier with in the end.
Very good. Aaron, thank you so much. Aaron Wimmett with us from Apex Digital. We're going to see if we can get him back next week to ask some more questions about Windows 8. Thank you so much for being with us, Aaron.
You're welcome. Have a great night, guys.
Thank you, too.
Thanks, Aaron.
All right. And again, let me give you our number is 800-859-0957. That's 800-859-0WJR. And by the way, just repeating something Aaron said at the end there are programs like this thing called Z, that is in Zebra, or Z if you're in Canada, Z Install. It costs about $120, and it claims that it will take all of your program settings and everything else and move them to the new computer. But as Aaron said, you can also be bringing a whole world of headaches with you as well. So it's better to get the original install material, which, Eddie, I think you were saying before, means before you make that transition, make sure you got all that stuff backed up and that you've got the install disks or program plus the password.
Right, because a lot of times what you're dealing with stuff like this is, you want to have the original media and or it could be in the downloads folder,
right,
save that, back
exactly.
it up. But when you're transferring programs from one computer to another, you might be running into a licensing issue.
Yes. Yes, that's a very good point. You'll find it often when you put it onto the new computer, it says, whoa, wait a minute, this is a brand new computer. And then you do have some of those problems as well. Okay, let's go to our phone lines then. Bert from Cleveland, thanks so much for being patient there. And how may we help you on the Internet Advisor?
Okay. What I have is, usually I use Internet Explorer to access my email account on SBC Global.
Mm-hmm.
In the past few days, when I try to boot it up, it will start to load.
Mm-hmm.
It will not complete the load, and then it will restart itself.
Are you talking about when you try launching the web browser and to go into the mail?
Yeah, correct.
Okay. Okay.
Now, when I use Chrome, I can access my emails through Chrome without this problem.
Right, right. So it sounds like, and I think you've done something very smart, which is, number one, we told folks, have two browsers on your computer precisely to do what Bert has done, which is when you have problems with one, see if it happens with the other one. If it doesn't, then the problem is probably within Internet Explorer.
Have you have you tried to clear your temporary files?
No.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the first thing I thought of, Gary. Good point.
Okay.
So within Internet Explorer, you could select Tools, Internet Options, and you have the ability to clear your temporary files, your history, and your cookies. Let's just try deleting your temporary Internet files first.
Yeah.
Because Microsoft Internet Explorer will attempt to use temporary files before it actually re-downloads the same page every time you go out to the Internet.
Speeds up your experience, generally speaking.
It does. But if there's a problem, this is some of the problems you can experience.
Okay.
But you haven't experienced any other kind of problems with that browser.
Yeah. The other thing could be the, I was going to say there might be a new add-on that was put onto your computer
that
could be
possible.
So you might want to look for malicious software, download malware bytes, and scan your computer for some malicious software or an add-on that may have been added to Internet Explorer.
Do you have
software that hasn't made its way to Chrome yet?
Which Explorer are you using? Which version do you know?
7.
So you might want to upgrade also. You'll need to still delete your temporary files, but you might want to upgrade as well.
Right.
That may be giving you some of the problems.
Now, what version of Windows are you using?
7.
Oh, thank goodness. Yeah. If you were going to say XP, I'm like, then I would say that don't load Windows 8 or 9 on there.
Because, very, very good point. I made an assumption I shouldn't have, so thanks for asking.
So that's good. So Windows 7, upgrade your browser to Internet Explorer 9 or something like that.
Yeah.
But, you could try deleting the temporary Internet files first.
Okay.
Yeah, and you're actually, that is provided to you by Yahoo, or provided, and it's just private labeled for AT&T or SBC Global.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah.
All right, thank you for calling.
You're welcome.
Happy holidays, Bert. Hope things work well for you there.
And let us know if that works. If it doesn't, we'll try to help you offline throughout the week. So
again, very wise that he has that second browser installed. Joe from Livonia, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure,
Joe.
How much do you guys know about the switch from Hotmail to Outlook?
It's pretty seamless. I was just doing it the other day. And,
It happened to me. It wasn't something that I did. They mentioned that they did that with some clients where they just simply said, boom, you're stuck.
Right.
I'm running a Mac and I'm running 10.4, and I know that they did say that there are some OSs that are no longer supported.
Yeah, 10.4 is, I'm trying to think, that's the Panther?
That's Tiger.
Tiger, pardon me. So you're quite a ways back in terms of Macs. Have you thought of upgrading on your Mac? I don't know if that's possible.
Well, I have, but on the one I can't because it's an old gigabit Ethernet, and they can only go up as far as 10.4.
Gotcha.
So how's this impacting you? You know, I mean, I do have a Hotmail account, but I'm not that, I know that when I go to hotmail.com and type in my ID and password, it brings up a very Outlook-looking interface through my web browser.
Which is what I think has happened to Joe, too, right?
Okay.
Well, I haven't seen Outlook in a long time, so I don't know whether it is, but I mean, it is so bare bones, it looks like it's a mobile app.
Well, that, you really put your finger on one of the key things about what Microsoft is trying to do. They're trying to bring all of their worlds together. And if you ever used Windows 8, you would know that the new way that Hotmail looks, now called Outlook.com, it looks just like tiles. As a matter of fact, when you go up and you click on the Outlook, it will present you with 4 tiles.
Okay, well, no tiles at all.
Yeah.
All I'm getting is, like I said, it looks like a mobile app where it is absolutely bare bones. There's no menu.
You're probably... What version of Safari are you using? Or are you using Safari?
4.13, which is the max that I can use.
Okay. Have you tried moving over to Chrome?
I can't because that takes 10.5 and it takes an Intel chip.
Okay. I didn't know that Chrome required that. That's a browser. I didn't know that required an Intel chip.
It's when they made the big switch from Motorola to Intel.
You're stuck.
Well, at least that's what I found when I tried to do it online.
Well, you may be right, Joe. I haven't faced that because you have almost, if you were running a Windows machine, this would be like running Windows XP SP1. not even SP2.
So the problems you're experiencing are in the browser itself, and the browser interpreting the data that from the hotmail.com, which will then take you to mail.live.com.
Hey, Joe, isn't there an email? I don't use it, but isn't there something called Thunderbird that you can use as well for reading your email?
Through Mozilla, right?
Through Mozilla?
There is for Firefox.
Yep. Yeah, Firefox, Mozilla.
Have you tried seeing the Hotmail through that?
No, I also thought about going to the library and trying to see if I could get it to work at all. But like I said, there is so little there on the screen.
Well, you'll actually find more. It's just a very clean, you're right, a very clean interface that looks quite different from what you're used to. You're absolutely right.
So you don't get a menu bar across the top?
Yeah, what you get is it looks a little different. I mean, in fact, quite different.
Okay.
So
Ed, hold that up so he can see it.
I was holding it up so Foster could see it.
Joe, what you said I think is a great idea. Go to the library. And for other folks out there, when I was learning how to use a computer, that's what I did. Your library has wonderful machines. They're up to date, and you'll be able to see what the experience looks like. And then understanding that you're using a much older version of an Apple operating system.
Now, are there any iTunes applications that would work on a Mac of that vintage that he could possibly download in a little application, free app for iTunes?
Gmail
might be another way to go.
We've
got to take a break here, and what we'll do is we'll talk to you offline. But for others of you folks out there, our number is 800-859-0WJR, 800-859-0957. Back to take more of your calls in just a moment. Thank you for being with us and live here on WJR 760 AM, our flagship station for those who are listening to us on the network. And our toll-free number is 800-859-0957. So listen, give us a call now. We have about 25 more minutes to answer your questions here. And it's first come, first served. Phone lines are open right now. I know this is kind of surprise we're here, but we're delighted to be able to do that on a live basis. So please give us some calls at 800-859-0957 or 800-859-0WJR.
And a lot of times the questions that you might ask, our answers may be able to help other people.
Absolutely.
There's also a chance we can't, in which case all you people out there that do have the answers, you keep listening too, and then call in with the answers to help us help the other people. So there's lots of times while we've made just about every mistake you can make, and we learn from them each time, and together we've made most of them, we haven't made them all.
Not at all. And, that's one of the things that endears me, I think, to a lot of people that I support, is I'm actually encouraged when they mess up. I don't get upset. I mean, that's my job to help them out.
Right.
But I'm like, this is a new one. I get really excited about, I haven't seen this before. What did you do? And how can I recreate this and fix it? And they're totally set back on that.
I will tell you, that reminded me of when you and I first met. We were both at EDS at the time. And you came in to me one day and you said, hey, my name's Ed Riddell, and I'm supposed to be your executive support, and you haven't called me, and if you don't call me, I'm going to lose my job. So
I did not say that, but close enough.
But I mean, it was like, don't you need something? And I kind of went, well, yeah, probably, but tell me what you do again. And you said, well, I basically help out the executives here, and I take and fix their machines. And I said, wow, that's pretty cool. And they understand me because I speak English to them. And I said, you can make execs understand technology? And you said, yeah, that's my job. And I said, you got to come on and co-host the show with
us.
That
was pretty much it, yeah.
But I remember the first time you came, you said, I'm not going to co-host. I'll be your guest.
Right.
And then we said, Ed, did you like it? Yeah, that was kind of fun. You want to come back next week and be our guest? And about it took about 3 weeks, and you kind of went, all right, I'll co-host.
Yeah, right, right. I think they had me as a guest for 3 or 4 weeks. But I remember also, to your benefit, I was in your office only for 4 or 5 minutes, and I'm like, he knows everything. He knows everything. I don't need to help him.
You know? Oh, no, that's not
true. He doesn't know
at all.
Everything. He knew how to configure his machine to access the domain, how to get it to the firewall, what his IP address was, how to set up the. I didn't need to do any of that stuff. I was quite impressed.
But there were times that, and there are still times that you help me out. I bring my machine in and go, okay, this one's got me stumped. So, the only thing better than you guys out there in our audience calling in is me being able to get right here in front of Ed every week and say, okay, I've got another problem. Help you out.
So. All right. Speaking of those questions, we have one on the line right now from Jim from Westland. Hi, Jim. How can we help you?
Okay. Both my friend and I have an older computer. He has a new one. Mm-hmm. We did nothing to change our internet connection, did not change the password, and he and I both have two computers. One computer completely stopped recognizing the proper password, and it happened on his new computer. Hmm. Why do they do that?
Wait, when you say
is it the computer, or it's we had to go to the internet and have them turn it back on?
Okay, hang on a second. When you say password, password to
password
what?
Password for your email.
Ah, okay, okay. That's not infrequent, Jim, that people experience that. Somebody hijacks and shame on them for doing it, but unfortunately it happens to a lot of people.
Coincidentally that it happened on the old or the new, or was
both.
It a new?
It happened on both.
It happened on both. Yeah. So it wasn't coincidence. He had two computers, and I think Foster's right.
Two different people.
Two different.
With two different accounts on
them. Two different people, right. Yeah, I had it on my old, and he had it on his new. Right.
Two different people experiencing the same thing.
It could quite possibly be that the email addresses, someone figured out the password through blunt force, and they were able to figure out what your passwords were. Happens quite frequently.
How do they figure it out, though, when you've got a protection program either provided by your internet provider, or in my case, I'm running Trend. How do they figure it out when you're being blocked and you continually test and your computer runs
clean? Listen to this. You have protection on your computer.
Right.
But anyone can, that they could guess that your email address is out there somewhere, and they can go to the provider and keep on trying passwords through blunt force. And they have programs that just say, edrudell@whatever.com, and they'll just continuously blast it with thousands of passwords per minute.
Per second.
And what might happen is, because both of them were close together in the same IP address range, they might have used this automatic program to hit hundreds, if not thousands of them. And
people from the same provider.
Because you're in the same provider in the same household, so you're in probably the same IP range.
Right.
What can you do to prevent it if there's such
complicated
a thing
passwords.
Out there?
It has nothing to do with your computer.
Yeah, it is typically because people use very simple passwords.
So let's stop, guys, for a second and help Jim and a lot of other people. Let's talk about passwords. Jim, how many characters were there in your password?
Yeah, without disclosing
eight plus letters, eight letters and numbers.
Okay,
oh, that's
eight
good.
Letters
so that's
and numbers.
Good.
That's actually very good. Matter of fact, folks, sometimes when you go to a website, they have a little bar or a little word next to it that says strong or weak password.
Yes.
And
what
Jim's
strong.
Describing is eight, which is letters plus numbers. That's very good.
Very good. Right. Case sensitive?
Upper and lowercase?
I usually keep lowercase, but sometimes I'll use one and switch it and make it case sensitive.
Okay, yeah,
excellent.
Case.
Sounds like you're
actually
doing the right thing.
Yeah, passwords are case sensitive, so I should have said upper and lower case.
So
what, I should have said.
What I've done recently is I had eight characters with alpha and numeric, and some of them, most of them, were nonsensical words that don't exist in a dictionary. But I've gotten to the point where I've added punctuation marks in the middle or in the end or the beginning,
characters.
Like exclamation points. So if I had a two in my password at the end, I'd put a £2. Or a two exclamation point, because it's the right next key over. So when I hit shift, I do two and then a shift exclamation point. So I'm almost going, it's a combination of alphanumeric and then pattern passwords by throwing a special character in there.
Right. Now, Jim, I have to ask a question. Was there a recognizable word that was part of your password?
And yes, there was.
Okay. Yeah. Well, see, part of what happens is the more unpredictable you can be, the better. So using a word that is like a standard English word
you can't use a word in any language.
Yeah, or Samantha.
Or in any language. Right. Like I speak Spanish, so I could use a word in Spanish, but I'd be in the same problem.
Well, they use the the vocabulary. I mean, they'll use the dictionary and they'll run through all those words, and they can do that in about 4 or 5 minutes.
Eight is a good number. Eight is a good number that you have, even a little bit more. 13 is better.
Better.
Yeah. Now, I will say this for you. So you used upper and lowercase. You used numbers and letters. And as Ed said, sprinkling punctuation can also help it.
Like putting a period in there, like dick.van.dyke.
Right, right. So whatever. But again, stay away from regular words. Now, I will say this. To help you out, there are some password generators. And you can find them sometimes if you Google for one. For instance, I used RoboForm as a way of guarding my passwords.
What was the one that Cal was evaluating?
One Password.
One Password.
The number
one
with password after it is another one.
And now, I use RoboForm now because of the experience you've had, Foster.
Right, exactly. And within that, there is a password generator. And you can say, how many characters do you want? I want 10, 11, 12. It will automatically spit out one that is a combination of all these things. Then you've got to write that down and keep it someplace safe. But then use that as your password.
So what happens basically is you have this add-on to your browser, and you enter in one password on your browser, and then it keeps track of any site that you go to, if it's Amazon, your email, whatever, and it remembers that randomly generated password that it created for you for all these different websites. That's what RoboForm and 1Password does. And so you have one password that unlocks all the passwords for all the websites.
So just to step back a little bit, Jim, you didn't do anything wrong, nor did your friend. It didn't have to be, didn't have anything to do with being an old computer or a new computer. But the more complex you make that password and the longer you make it, the safer you are. But you know what? Eventually you may get hacked, no matter how well you try this.
It happened
to
me.
Yeah, it's happened to all of us.
It's happened to all of us here, by the way. We're no different than you. It's happened to us at different times.
So it could be something else. It could have been, say, a key logger that was somehow put on your machine. But if you have good antivirus that's up to date,
and
you're
like
using
Trend
Micro, that's what I heard you say, I believe.
Correct.
And if as long as it's up to date with all your virus definitions up to date, then it's not likely that anybody could get a keylogger on there.
So
then it's probably brute force.
Yep. Do you know what when we say brute force? It means that there are people; these bad guys have developed these programs that are just wicked smart. They can crack just about any password given enough time. And
it just runs through the dictionary.
Yeah,
right?
And the object is to make them take longer. Because at a certain point, they're going to say, this isn't worth it.
An easy one.
Gary has used the expression, like, for instance, somebody's going in to try to break in houses in your neighborhood. They'll try every door. If it's locked, they'll go on to look for the unlocked one.
They'll get 20 or 50 out of 10,000, and they're happy.
Yeah,
and then they
absolutely.
Give up, and they go to the next domain.
You got to run faster than the other guy.
So, Jim,
okay, thanks for your help.
Thanks for your call, and we'll be back to take more of your calls. Welcome back. It's the Internet Advisor, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, Ed Riddell. And by the way, thank you to Annie Nichols and Rich Lisinski, the folks behind the glass who are making this program run smoothly. Thank you very much for doing that. And by the way, folks, if you need any of the information, there's a load of information on our wealth of information on our homepage at internetadvisor.net, because we had Rick Broida on during our first hour, which I know those who are listening to us on our flagship station at WJR didn't hear the first hour. But those of you who have downloaded the podcast or are listening right now, great, great stuff on gadgets to buy for the holidays from Rick Broida, who is our gadget man. He's also a blogger for CNET, where his regular daily blog is called The Cheapskate, and he has got some great stuff there.
And also a $10 coupon for restaurant use.
Right, called
feedforward.restaurant.com.
And we have live links. What I'm going to tell you is you don't have to write any of this down, because you go to internetadvisor.net. It's all there.
And you get a coupon for $10, and it's free.
Free. A digital stocking stuffer. Hey, guys, we do have a few minutes left, by the way. I've got a question here to answer that we received by email, but I also want to leave the phone lines open for anybody who wants to get in here right now. 800-859-0957. At the last minute, we'd love to take your call. 800-859-0957. One thing quickly, guys, we were talking about passwords with Jim, and I think we touched on a lot of good stuff. One thing I forgot to say, I am seeing this in more and more places, and it is this. Change your password frequently. Now, that may be, for instance, every quarter. It may be every 6 months, even just every year, whenever. But just change it on some regularity.
Yeah. And what you don't want to do is you don't want to use you really don't want to use something in sequence. So if it ended in 3-4, you don't want to make it 4-5.
Did you see that study about the most frequently used passwords?
No.
Yeah.
Oh, it was ridiculous. What was it? It was like 1-2-3-4-5-6.
Yep. Password 1.
Yeah, was that with or their birthday? Or the worst thing is that we're our own worst enemies,
right,
very often.
Of course we are.
So if you just use some of the things we talked about of using, you know, 8-plus letters, uppercase, lowercase, numbers, use punctuation, and then change it.
Right.
Like every 3 months.
Yeah, 3 months. That's what most policies, most companies have policies.
Right. And Gary's talking from the point of view of being within IT and in a company or in an organization, you do that on a disciplined basis because you don't want that getting messed up. Okay, we've got Pat with us from Commerce. Hi, Pat. Welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Hi, guys. Hey, you guys were talking about moving Windows 7 to Windows 8, but you didn't address old guys like me who still have an XP.
Well, you know, the process, by the way, is pretty much the same. Ed, maybe you can talk a little bit about the migration wizard that's there.
Well, yeah, well, that's one thing I want to do. But I think I've got my Windows, because what I've done is a new computer. I've got the Windows 8 going now.
Okay,
I've got a new computer. I still got the XP going, but I'm going to try to get, you know, some of my documents off of it, et cetera, et cetera. But the big thing is Internet Explorer, Outlook Express. To Outlook, full Outlook.
Okay, you want to go from Outlook Express to Outlook. Let's handle a couple of these things. Pat, what's your experience been with Windows 8 so far?
Well, so far, it's been wishy-washy, because I like to go back to the regular old Internet screen, okay? So I'm getting used to it.
But okay, yeah. So you got your desktop, by the way, folks.
I got my desktop.
So you can go back to that.
You got your regular desktop, but right. I can't figure out how to get, like, the icons, or what they call them, apps now on Windows 8 over to the desktop.
Well, there are...
But that's a big deal, I guess.
Quick way. When you're on the start page and you got all those colorful tiles up there, go to the application you want to put on the desktop, right-click on it, check mark will appear. If you look down below in the toolbar, it will say pin to the taskbar. And then what happens is you say yes to that, and what happens is then on your desktop, it won't appear as an icon on the screen. It'll be on the launch bar at the very bottom, where it's always been, like with Windows 7.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Yeah, the old way. So go to the start button.
Yep, and right-click on the app, the tile that you want, and then it'll put a little check mark in the corner. Then you go to the bottom of the screen there.
Oh, yeah, it did. Cool.
Okay, go to the bottom of the screen, and it'll give you options then when you right-click. And it'll say one of them is to pin to the taskbar. And you say, yes, do that. And then what will happen is when you go back to your desktop, boom, it's right there. I just did it for my wife's computer today with a number of apps.
Yeah, and you can do that in any of the Windows operating systems.
And to a toolbar. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Okay. So now, quickly, Pat, guys, getting from XP at 80, wants to get his documents.
So step by step.
No, the big thing is my emails and addresses from Outlook Express into full Outlook, because I got Office 2010 with full Outlook on.
Well, Gary, if you know...
Go ahead. Come on, Gary.
I mean, there's the upgrade about that, but the only way that I know how to do it is you have to install Office on the old computer and convert and have it automatically convert your inbox and addresses to Outlook, to a PST. And then once that's done, then when you run the migration utility... It'll transfer those over.
What I've got is on the XP, I've got Office 2007, but when I installed it, I said, I don't need Outlook. I got Outlook Express.
You need Outlook.
Word and Excel.
Oh, that'll work still. So you go into Outlook, and you just tell it you want a new mail profile, and there's a way in Office 2007 with Outlook to tell it I want to create a new mail profile, and that you can import your Outlook Express contacts.
And
you could probably Google that.
Transfer it over to Live Mail, and then from Live Mail, I could get it to Outlook.
Let me give this back up a second, Pat, because what Ed's talking about is something that will happen on your computer with your Office program there. You would create a new account.
Within Outlook. Within Outlook 2007, you can tell it that I wish to copy I wish to import all my settings from Outlook Express.
Yes, and it'll do that.
And once you do that, it'll create a PST file that can be copied then to your new Windows 8 computer.
Yeah, the problem is when I installed Office 2007, I neglected to install full Outlook because I had Outlook Express.
Right,
now
right.
I can't find my floppy.
Oh, I see what you're saying. You can't find your DVDs or CDs.
So I can't. That's what I thought I would have to do, but I went looking for it tonight when I went ahead and got the new machine and the old machine going.
Do you have the product key? You might be able to go back up and download it.
Well, he might be able to go into... It might still be on the computer.
Oh, yeah, right.
So if you just go into Control Panel under... Programs and Features,
yeah.
Or Add Remove Programs, and you can add that back in there. Instead of just hitting Remove, you can do Change.
Okay.
And when you select Change, you can enable the Outlook component,
yes.
And that'll then should add that program onto the computer.
Okay, so that's your first step, Pat. And then from there, you can make your way to being able to transfer your stuff over to Windows 8, okay?
Okay, I appreciate that. And the first trick about clicking on the thing in getting it to the toolbar, that was cool. It worked right away. that helped. That got me started right away.
See, my misery is your blessing.
You've got it, guys. Thank you much.
And you have used Upgrade Assistant, I think.
Yes. Then you can use the Easy Migration, I think it's called, Assistant from that point on.
You can go to windows.microsoft.com and download the Upgrade Assistant.
Okay, good. That's excellent as well. All right, let's go to Jim from Dearborn. Jim, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Yes, hi, how are you doing?
Good, sir. Hey, how can we help you?
Do I need two Windows 8 programs, for one for each computer? I have a Vista laptop, and I have a Dell, and I also have a Dell desktop with Windows 7 on it.
You will need to get separate license upgrades, I believe, for each device. Am I right, Eddie?
You know,
you think so?
I thought I heard that Microsoft was changing that for household. I know they've done it for Office products. I don't know for sure for Windows. Let's go on the default is yes, you'll probably have to go with a separate license for each.
But right now, you got your best deal, Jim. It's a $40 upgrade, I believe.
Yeah, $39.
$39. You can get an upgrade for each one of the machines. I think it's each one. We'll have to investigate this a little bit more, okay? And I'm going to just put you on hold. We'll talk to you as we wrap up the program.
Yeah,
so
we'll
hang on a second,
and we'll talk to you, and then we'll try to come up with this with the answer, because I did think they were changing that as well, but it doesn't say that on their site.
Traditionally, Microsoft likes its income.
Right.
And licenses are... It's not like a Mac, where I can put on a whole bunch of different machines. Unfortunately, up until this point, it's been expensive and only on one machine, but I think it's been changing now. So thanks, Jim, for your call. Thanks, everybody, for joining us here on the Internet Advisor. By the way, you can go to internetadvisor.net, sign up for our podcast. We'll download on Sunday nights, or go to iTunes if you want and sign up for a podcast there. Thanks so much for being with us. You've been listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor, where since 1998, we've been helping non-geeks to find answers to their questions and to make their journey on the Internet a much more enjoyable one. If you have any questions you'd like answered directly by our team, please go to our homepage at internetadvisor.net and fill in the Contact Us forum, or join one of the forums that are there on the Internet Advisor. And don't forget, the toolkit is available with Ed's excellent advice, full of all sorts of information and free software to help. Help you. So don't forget to visit us on Facebook and like our site so that you can catch all the news that we post there during the week. The door is always open for you at internetadvisor.net, on our Facebook page, and through Twitter. Safe surfing, and we'll see you again soon.